We can bring language into our programs and use the gardens as a backdrop to tell stories like Alexander's Outing, which is a book written about a duck that lives here. Or we can do mathematics programs or traditional science and life cycles. I don't know, the world's your oyster, it's a lot of fun.
That was Mary Bell from the Royal Botanic Garden, Sydney. And yes, they certainly do plants and soils and things, but as you just heard, they do much more than that. In this interview, we talk with Mary about, well, what goes on in a major garden like the Royal Botanic Garden in Sydney, and that includes a little bit of science with chocolate.
You're listening to the Physics Ed Podcast. For hundreds of ideas, free experiments and more, go to physicseducation.com.au. And now, here's your host, Ben Newsome.
Yes, welcome again to another Physics Ed podcast. My name is Ben Newsome, and as always, we love talking about science and especially how science can be used in education. And in this case, we talk with Mary from the Royal Botanic Garden in Sydney. Now, in this episode, unfortunately, Mary had a bit hard this time because she had to move around and dodge renovations, as you're just about to hear, which means occasionally the audio kind of does a very squeaky kind of chop and change sound, which is really comes down to trying to run a connection over 3G in the heart of Sydney. But anyway, the information is still worth your time because Mary has got a lot to share and a lot of background when it comes to teaching about plants, soils, the environment, and much more. Enjoy.
This is the Physics Ed Podcast.
Hi, Mary Bell. Welcome to the Physics Ed Podcast.
Hey there, Ben. Nice to talk to you today.
Yeah, I know it is. I know you've had a flat-out time, especially describing what you've had to do, even just preparing yourself for this particular interview. What have you had to do this afternoon?
Well, since we're having our offices space renovated and we've had lessons going on all day with lots of different schools and I couldn't get the laptop to work, I'm now talking to you in a large theatre by myself on my iPad, but we got it worked out, which is pretty good.
Yeah, you got to love that. Quick, go jump onto iTunes, download the app and off you go.
Yeah, it's great. It's good.
Hey, we probably should let people know, Mary, obviously I know you, but some people may have never met you. So tell us, who are you? What do you do? What is it that floats your boat and all that type of thing?
Okay, cool. Well, I'm a coordinator of school and community programs at the Royal Botanic Gardens in Sydney and also at the Blue Mountains Botanic Gardens at Mount Toma. So these are both beautiful botanic gardens in Sydney, and I get to run a lot of school programs at them. And when I'm not doing that, I run video conferences with schools all over the place. And my passion is plants. So when I'm doing my job, I'm organising lessons along a lot of different curriculums for schools to visit our gardens and learn about what we do. So there's little kids, big kids, TAFEs and universities all wanting to know more about plants, which is really great. And I work with a living collection. So our botanic gardens are living collections of plants, and this is what I like to make accessible and available to the people that visit us. And we not only have a living collection, we have preserved plants in our herbarium that date back to Banks and Solander, who collected on the trip out with Captain Cook in 1770. So, yeah, it's a really amazing job to work with plants and people and science. I love it.
That's fantastic. And just out of interest, obviously you're heavily involved in working in the gardens, but where did this love of plants come from?
Yeah, well, I have a memory. My first memory in my life is being in a cot inside a tent in the bush.
Oh, gosh, that is early.
So I would have been really young and I was singing songs to myself. It was a happy memory. Yeah, my family went on regular camping trips and four-wheel drive trips, and I just loved all that. I just had a deep love of the bush. And so when I went to uni, I decided that I'd do any course that had a field trip in it. Yes, and my mum was a science teacher, and at that age, everyone was saying, "You're going to be a science teacher, aren't you?" And I went, "No, I'm not." Guess what?
So, it'll happen to you. Right.
So there you go. I don't know. It was just all around me. And, I can see myself writing to my giving my mum books on plants in my early 20s and stuff like that. I don't know what was going on, but that's what's happened.
Oh, look, I totally get it. Like, because grew up all along the east coast of Australia. My father was in the army, and the family locus, the main part where we came from in northern New South Wales, is a series of properties, rural properties, cattle, sheep, and that type of thing. And I have distinct memories as a kid as well, playing in bushland areas and making cubby houses and all that type of thing. And my first job directly out of university happened to be bushland regeneration. Maybe there's a theme here.
Yes, certain people attracted to certain things.
Oh, fantastic. Now, you're right. You basically are a science teacher, but you also taught in primary school.
I actually haven't.
Oh, you haven't?
I haven't. No, so I actually haven't taught in a school. So my whole career has been based in a lot of outdoor education. So there you go. I started off in pure science in my career. And whilst I liked it, I liked the idea of teaching and being with children and learning and teaching understandings. And so I went and did some teaching training, but at that time I was working at a farm in Western Sydney doing education programs there. So I did it all by cassette tape, mostly.
Oh, wow.
So there you go.
Oh, there you go. Well, for a start, obviously you're a brilliant educator. I can just imagine in front of young kids and old kids, that's probably where I thought that you'd had a bit of a primary background, I'm just thinking about teaching via tape. Tell us more.
Yeah. So the only university that ran external courses that I could do while I was working was the University of New England, and they sent you your lectures by cassette tape. So that's how I did it. I did teach in the classroom, of course, as part of my prac, but I never did practice in the classroom. I always wanted to do this kind of work, outdoors or in museums, that kind of thing. I've been lucky.
It's good fun, isn't it? You can get to meet a lot of different schools and classes and see what makes them tick and what they're interested in, for sure. I mean, I was actually having a look at what you've been over. You used to work in soils.
I did.
What were you doing there?
Yes. So I worked for an organisation that at the time didn't have a high workforce of women, and there was an opportunity for them to employ through government grant women in soil science. So I did some extra studies in geomorphology, and I was working for the Soil Conservation Service, so I was teaching people about conserving soil, conserving the land. Mm-hmm. And that was in the 80s. Oh, my goodness. And I also did mapping. I mapped soil in the southern areas of New South Wales around Coomer and Queanbeyan using air photo interpretation.
Wow, because I mean, the funny thing about soils is that some, especially students, have no idea that there are different types of soils, even in smaller localities like Sydney itself. I mean, there are three distinct soil areas, let alone the smaller parts as well of Cumberland Plain, Cooks River Clay Plain. You've got sandstone areas, and it really affects directly what the plants do.
That's right. You have these certain vegetation types. So that was actually soil landscape mapping at the time, which was looking at what the vegetation told you about the soils underneath and the geology related to that, and what kind of risks that held for soil erosion and things like that. So in terms of our clean drinking water, you need to have a clean catchment. You don't want soils washing down into our rivers where we, you know, end up having our water from that we drink and use in our everyday life. So it's actually really important to manage the land around it. So, yeah, soil is essential to plant life and our lives. It's really good stuff.
Absolutely. So actually we run a forensics program, and one of the parts of it is actually incorporating a station where the potential suspect has their soil on a particular piece of evidence. The students have to work out where did the was this suspect in this area based on the crime scene soil smear that's in the room. It's kind of weird how you can use soils in different ways to teach science.
Oh, yeah, that sounds really fascinating, Ben.
Oh, a bit of fun. It's all good fun. So, obviously, wind it forward, you're heavily involved with the Royal Botanics Garden in Sydney, as well as the one out in Mount Toma. Now, there might be people not realising what is out in Mount Toma. Let's hear about that.
Okay, so this Botanic Garden, Mount Toma, celebrates its 30th birthday this year. So it's smack bang the middle in a World Heritage Area, and it has cool climate plants. It also conducts revegetation type relocation programs of the Wollamai Pine. And it's an amazing and beautiful garden with a stunning view of Sydney. Yeah, come up and see us there sometime.
So that brings up the point, because obviously there's going to be a lot of educators listening to this, and some of which has school groups in the Sydney Basin area. Obviously not the people all over Australia, but there is some people around you. When they come in to visit you and your team, what sort of things can they do with their students?
Well, what I like about what we do is that we tend to be all across the curriculum. So it's not just science, it's history. Here at the Botanic Gardens, where we celebrated our 201st birthday this year, as a botanic garden, that is, of course, we have a deep history, we have Aboriginal culture, special sites here. We have the site of the first farm, so there's great history. But we can bring language into our programs and use the gardens as a backdrop to tell stories like Alexander's Outing, which is a book written about a duck that lives here. Or we can do mathematics programs or traditional science and life cycles. I don't know, the world's your oyster, it's a lot of fun.
What age group tends to come to your gardens?
We do get a lot of primary schools. Generally, in the junior years, they really love to come here and do planting and learn about plant life cycles. Yeah. And they do love those Aboriginal programs that we offer that are really authentic and are with really fabulous educators that have great relationships with kids and can talk about their culture at great length and really get them excited. And we do get high school groups as well. I'd love to have more. I love working with the high school groups because they're the ones that are going to move on, hopefully, to study plants or study science and learn some more.
So imagine you had to, our chat is over and you've got a spare hour and you happen to have someone turn up and they said with their group, we would love you, Mary, just to run a workshop on plants and you can do whatever you want. It doesn't matter what it is. Just show me what you love to show people. What would that lesson sort of look like? What would be the best lesson? You go, you know what, I just wish people would book this more often, or at least allow me to show people this thing.
Oh, well, yeah, I like plant classification. So, you know, Ben, we've got the seaweed, so the algae, you know, we love to get that out and show students and teachers algae, seaweed, that's a plant. Even freshwater algae and how they grow and how they indicate environmental factors, and then we can move on to the mosses and liverworts, and I don't know, they're just really cute plants, and I don't know if everyone is aware of liverworts, but yeah, they're one of my favorites. And then we can go on to ferns, and we've got a beautiful fernery, so we're going to go and look at that, and then we can look at all the conifers, all the cone bearing plants. And then, well, when we talk about the flowering plants, there's just so many, and of course the unusual and beautiful Australian flora that we have. I'd just love to do the whole breadth and depth of that, and then maybe finish it off with some bush tucker, using some of our Australian flora with lemon myrtle, maybe in some toffee and some cordial with some of the other leaves and fruits in that.
All right, so we're not going to do an hour. We're doing a whole day, and if not, a camp overnight. By the sound of that.
Oh, yeah, yeah, we want that too.
Oh, that would be really cool. What a great day / potential several days. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, I know. It would be great. And then maybe we've got to meet some of our scientists and, you know, go and look at some of those herbarium specimens that Banks and Solander collected.
Well, that's really...
And maybe we'll try a hand at some botanical illustration while we're at it. I don't know. We could do anything you like, Ben. When are you coming?
Oh, I will happily turn up when you do that. Sounds awesome. Especially when I think about how you're weaving history and a bit of art in as well, because I mean that's what they always talk about. It's not just STEM, science, technology, engineering, maths. There is an A which sometimes gets missed.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Yeah.
No, that'd be fantastic. I mean, obviously, the bank's collection is very impressive. I mean, I kind of wonder, I mean, when you speak to the general public, what do they imagine it's going to look like?
The collection?
Banks? Yeah, are they expecting a dusty drawers filled with old brown specimens? Are they expecting plant pressings under newspaper? Or do they think it's going to be something? I mean, what do people expect to see when they...
I'm not sure that, like, the herbarium's not open very often to the public, so I think that they're very surprised by what they see. And I've actually been working with herbarium specimens today, and every time I look at them, they just look stunning. They're just these perfectly preserved examples of plants that are displayed on paper, archival paper, and presented in such a way that all the plant features can be studied. So you look at a big Banksia cone, and Ben, do you know who the Banksias are named after? I wonder.
Joseph Banks.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So I like that one with the kids because they have to really think. And
good, I got it right, yes.
can you imagine trying to present a Banksia cone on a flat piece of paper? It's not flat, it's three-dimensional, it looks amazing. And hey, these were collected back,
no, sorry, back I'm so, a long so time sorry. Ago. Sorry for talking over you there. I got a little excited because I remember this conversation I had maybe about 3-4 months ago. One of the things I've been lucky enough to do is pick up a Churchill Fellowship, which allowed me to travel around the world and speak with a lot of people who do a lot of science video conferencing. However, it also introduced me to a very wide network of people who do kind of cool things in their own industries. And someone I ran into, which I must introduce you, must find that person's contact and get in touch with you. This person went to Harvard to study how they made, a plant collection, but made out of glass.
See, really?
Yeah, really, wow. Very much really. There's a particular plant collection that got done in Harvard, and this curator had decided, using great skill, to create botanical specimens at a serious level, whereby the flowers are almost indistinguishable from the real thing. We're talking color, talking shape, talking size, even to the point of where the right number of seeds are arranged in the right way, the right size, little hairs in the right spot, the works. And this particular person got to travel to Harvard to spend 6 or 7 weeks there. I think it might have been longer, whereby they were trying to work out, as a professional glassblower, how did this person do this? And
stunning. Wow. Did you see it?
He showed me photos. I went, oh my gosh. He said, I want to show you some photos. He didn't tell me what he had done yet. And the photos were, I said, oh cool, it's a plant collection. He goes, no, it's not, it's a glass collection.
Wow, that's really, really interesting. I love it.
Yeah, really impressive. I mean, you wouldn't think of it, geez, that's putting A into STEAM if you know, to the nth degree.
Indeed.
No, that's cool. So when you're talking botany with children and whatnot, what tends to grab their attention the most?
Well, yeah, I'll tell you what grabs them the most, and that's the bum seed. I was going to mention that today.
Oh, what is that?
So what is the bum seed? It's the biggest seed in the world. It's the double coconut, and it just happens to look just like a bum.
Right.
So you kind of have it to the side, and then you bring it out, and you can see them all giggling and laughing and talking to each other about it. And I'm going to show you the biggest seed in the world, I say, and there it is, and it just looks like a bottom. This tree is actually quite endangered, and the seed that we have is from when we had a museum here, you know, last century. So they're very rare these days. They're sort of on the black market and things like that. And it's just amazing, this huge seed the size of a basketball pretty much. Mm. There you go. That kind of gets them in.
Yeah, I bet it does. Oh, that's so much fun. Hey, like, obviously you've been doing this for a long time. Have you ever had a time where you've been teaching a particular topic, whether it's, you know, pollination, germination, whatever it is, and just something's not quite working. Like the class is just gone on a tangent you didn't expect, or an experiment is just clearly not working. Has there ever been a time where just things have just not gone right?
Yeah, well, I'm not sure I can exactly remember anything in particular, because I think day-to-day working outdoors here at the Botanic Gardens, it's always like that. The garden bed's closed. They've decided to mow exactly where you're standing. so it's just a movable feast. But the story I do like to tell is that, my office is right next to a lawn where the teachers come and get ready for their lessons. And one day I knew we had no lessons on, and I saw this teacher come and sit on the lawn, and she looked very happy and with her class and everything. I went, that's interesting. And I went outside to talk to her, and she said, oh, yeah, I'm here for the lesson. And she showed me the bit of paper, and she'd got the wrong day. So there she is with her whole class, you know, wanting to do something. And so there you go. That's life on the spot. I said, okay, all right, I'll make a lesson for you. So we walked around the garden and went up to our then tropical centre and showed them that. And yeah, so life on the hop, Ben. That's how it goes.
I remember actually I was at a science festival, and with science festival, you've got multiple schools running around to go to their different workshops and shows at the right time. And I remember there was a teacher with students, and you could see that this poor person was at a wit's end, because somehow, some way, the timetable had been messed up, and every single workshop she arrived to had someone else already doing stuff in. Can you imagine these kids, right? I mean, they turn up this fun day, and now they're 10 or 11 years old, want to do fun stuff. They're kind of being barred at the door. And so I was lucky enough, I was presenting with a second person for this particular workshop, which I didn't really need to do. So we're lucky how we had spare materials. We actually ran some stuff out in the corridor for them.
Yeah, corridors are great places to run lessons, especially outdoor ones.
I think when I was working with CSIRO, I think I remember actually running a science program in a broom cupboard, an extended broom cupboard, because they didn't have a they literally didn't have the location for the school. That was at another science festival as well. I mean, I'm not kidding. It was like this sort of, now a lot of teachers know this, you know, when you got the hall which has the chairs and the tables and they're all stacked up, we kind of had to rip out what we could into the corridor and shovel these 30 kids into this space. Probably be an issue with fire rules, I suppose. But
yeah,
it's amazing what you can do when you have to do it.
Mm. Yeah, and it's not uncommon, these kind of challenges, I must say.
Yeah, it is very much a moving feast. So, I mean, like if you had a contact from a primary teacher who just said, look, you know what, I really want to get these kids into learning about their local wildlife and their local bushland, and perhaps didn't have that much, you know, cash to come visit, you know, a garden like yourselves or somewhere else, what advice would you give them to start these kids on the right track about appreciating nature?
Yeah, I wonder. I think it happens a lot. I think it's all I want to say is go outside, whatever outside might be. It's a constantly changing environment, and if you spend time to just look and discover, and even if it's with cameras or just looking with magnifying glasses and just look at the small world that's going on around you, on under the tree bark or under the leaves or in the mulch, there's a whole new world there. And I just think it's good to appreciate nature by looking up close and being outside.
Doesn't mulch just grab kids' attention when they're directed to it? Leaf litter has so much stuff in it.
That's right. And that's when you're on a timetable and you're running the leaf litter hunt and you need to move on to the next activity, but somehow you've discovered another little creature, and it's a bit tricky to get the kids disengaged for the next thing.
No, totally. I mean, that's great. I love the idea. Just take them outdoors. Have a look. If we're going to learn about nature, we might as well, funnily enough, go out into it.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea.
That's awesome. Now, obviously, there'll be there'll be people who would love to be able to find out how they can engage with the gardens. And even if they're in another country, I'm sure they'd be wanting to contact other gardens and that as well, just to find out what they can do. Now, as for yourself, you're heavily involved with, you know, several gardens in different ways. How could they get in touch with you?
Yeah, well, I've got an email address, so I'll give you that. I'm out there on Twitter. Our webpage has had a lot of information on it. I'm really keen to do video conferencing with other countries and other places. So if anyone wants to get involved with that, I'd love to hear from you.
Well, absolutely. Before you sign off, let's just have a chat about that, because I know you're doing a little bit into Southeast Asia.
Yeah. We're really trying to get into Korea and particularly Hong Kong at the moment with some special sponsorship for our video conference program. We're really hoping to engage students from those countries in our program. I'm looking forward to that.
That would be really cool, because the students could really show what's happening in their site with their plants and teach you.
Indeed. I'd love to learn more from kids. Always keen on that.
Yeah, I love a flipped learning thing. It's awesome. Hey, well, thank you very much, Mary. That's great to have a chat with you. I know you've had a very busy day, especially being moved around in different parts of the of your sites to be able to even make this connection. But look, we made it there in the end.
Appreciate the time, Ben. I've really enjoyed it.
Oh, much appreciated. Mary, we'll put that all in the show notes so people can contact you via email and Twitter and all that type of thing. And look, I really, really, really enjoy having a quick chat with you, especially talking about an area which certainly grabs my fancy, because I really did enjoy restoring bushland areas before I became a science teacher.
Yeah, I've done a bit of it myself, and yeah, there's nothing like quiet time in the bush.
Exactly. And with that, we should leave the quiet as we head into the weekend. Thank you very much, Mary. Enjoy
your
afternoon.
No worries, Ben.
This is the Physics Ed Podcast. We're all about science, ed tech, and more. To see 100 fun free experiments you can do with your class, go to physicseducation.com.au. That's physics spelled FIZZICS. And click 100 free experiments.
And there you go. That's Mary Bell from the Royal Botanic Garden in Sydney. And I'm really, really proud to have her on board. And especially when she was in the middle of a renovation, she could have easily turned away and said, no, it's too hard. But she made it happen, especially with hammers banging, internet struggling. It was fantastic that she was going to be on board, and I was really, really happy to have her. And look, I definitely grabbed a couple of things out of that interview, so I really want to go through just a few of them, and I'd love to hear what your thoughts are on this as well. So firstly, my first takeaway was very much be a little cheeky. And I really do mean that. Mary was only just talking about the bum seed, the world's largest seed. And of course, be a little cheeky. It's going to be a little bit of a pun. But the reason I say that is having a little twinkle in your eye, just a little bit of a, hey, I've got a bit of an inside joke here, will certainly grab kids' attention. I mean, okay, we're meant to be educators. We're meant to be holding a certain amount of decorum. However, sometimes being too formal for too long is going to turn kids off. And look, being a little cheeky, I really like that. That is really kind of cool. I do like that. Number two, go check out a herbarium. Really, it has more than just a series of dusty plant collections. They're there so that scientists, so botanists, can compare against other type of specimens to work out what sort of plants there are in the area, and how are they changing over time? What's the diversity doing? And also can mean that we can discover new species that we may not be aware of purely by comparing other herbariums. And they're not necessarily always just pressed on paper. You can find arboretums. You can find places where there are living plant collections. And funnily enough, in many botanical gardens, that's where you certainly will find them. Go check them out. It's well worth your time. And number three, definitely consider using history, culture, language as much as you can when it comes to teaching science. It just gives science a bit of a context. It's not just so much a factoid, like a series of knowledge points. Science has developed over time, and being able to go back in history and say, this is what we knew then, and this is what we know now, and importantly, this is why we know it. It's so critical. So kids can kind of get an understanding that science doesn't exist in a vacuum. And a number of our guests have certainly talked about this. I'd love to know, what were your learnings? Hey, drop us a line. I'd love to hear more.
Thanks for listening to the Physics Ed Podcast. Love your science? We do too. Here's this episode's education tip of the week. Grab your pencil and get ready to make some notes.
As we come into National Science Week, I really think in Australia and beyond, we should be looking at citizen science as a major theme, especially for National Science Week this week. So, What could your students and your friends, colleagues, neighbours and whoever else you can speak with, what can they be doing to help out scientists in the real world? So, there are some support networks. Firstly, if you're in Australia, go jump on the Australian Citizen Science Association or the Atlas of Living Australia or even the Australian Museum Centre for Citizen Science. Those three there will help you out in a bunch of ways to find different citizen science projects which are near your home. However, if you're not in Australia, perhaps go check out Discovery Circle or SciStarter, or even just type in Citizen Science Association or something like that into your favourite search engine. You'll find some people who'll be able to help you out finding galaxies and classifying birds or fish or finding anything to do with extraterrestrial life or weather or reefs or whatever. There are heaps of different ways you can be contributing, and you'd be surprised at how easy it is. All you probably need is a smartphone and download their app.
This is the Physics Ed Podcast. We're excited about science. Grab a copy of our new book, Be Amazing, How to Teach Science the Way Primary Kids Love, from our website. Just search Be Amazing Book. It's available in hard copy and ebook. Go to physicseducation.com.au. That's physics spelled F-I-Z-Z-I-C-S.
During that interview with Mary, there was something I really want to get back into, and it was those glass flowers I mentioned. Those glass flowers, that collection at Harvard is very real, and I really think you should go check it out. So jump onto huh.harvard.edu. So again, huh.harvard.edu/glass-flowers. You will find the Ware collection of glass models of plants, which is, you know, to be honest, the glass flowers. These are a massively popular collection, which have over 4,300 individual glass models. They're heaps, including 847 life-size models. These are botanically accurate models. They were made back in 1886, and tell you what, they were stunningly done. Put in through from 1886, 1887, all the way through to 1936, and these flowers completely boggle the mind. When you look at it, when you jump on huh.harvard.edu, you look into that glass flowers collection, you will find some flowers that will blow your mind. You'll think, how are they made from glass? It's amazing. And speaking of creative, something that our last guest did talk about was the importance of being creative, and that guest was Karina Strecker from the Ann Arbor Hands-On Museum. Check out what she had to say.
And I think it helps to have that creative side, to be able to think of things creatively. But sometimes I do find with our education programs is that sometimes not having the science background is really helpful, in that I have to learn it myself. So it's like, how can I make this relatable just for myself to be able to teach it is really helpful. And okay, how am I going to have students be able to learn about this? Because it's just kind of a process where, okay, if I'm going to be talking about, you know, molecular structure, I'm going to have to learn what that even means to begin with. And in that learning process can come out some really creative ways to teach students.
And Karina Strecker definitely knows her creative abilities, because she has a background in theater. And nowadays she's heavily involved with being an education manager at the Ann Arbor Hands-On Museum in Michigan. Look, jump on last week's episode. You can definitely find out all about her and find out how she worked from theater to working on a plane to working in quality control of toys, and now heavily involved with a major hands-on museum. It's quite a story.
Thanks for listening to the Physics Ed Podcast. Sign up now for our fortnightly email newsletter. It's loaded with details on new experiments you can do, STEM teaching articles, new gadgets, exclusive offers, and upcoming events. Go to physicseducation.com.au. Scroll to the bottom and add your email.
And that just about brings us to the end of yet another Physics Ed Podcast. Hey, you know what? Jump on our website and check out all those free experiments. But not only that, jump onto your favorite podcast catcher and hit subscribe. There's so many more episodes coming up. And next week, we get to talk with Derek Williamson from the Museum of Human Disease. Now, that museum is very cool, the Museum of Human Disease. They're in UNSW, so university in Eastern Sydney, that has this cool museum. And it's really unknown in some ways. Even the students of the university don't even realize it's there, that all these weird and wild different type of disease specimens are housed all under one roof. And Derek certainly allows high school students and students who are doing medicine to come and check it out, but also teaches about it all over the world using video conferencing. very, very cool. And until then, I'd love to hear about what you've been thinking about the podcast. Leave a review if you can. And as always, may your science lessons be fun. Please make them informative and grab your students' imagination. You've been listening to me. My name's Ben Newsom. I'm from Physics Education, and you've been listening to the Physics Ed Podcast.
You've been listening to another Physics Ed Podcast. We're excited about science. Subscribe to us on iTunes to download the next episode as soon as it's released. And don't forget, for hundreds of ideas, free experiments, our new Be Amazing book, and more, go to physicseducation.com.au.